Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org. URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
This is the California Report. I'm Rachel Miro in for Scott Schaefer. Coming up, we spend the entire show in middle school. In some ways, it's a lot like you remember it.
I have students that, you know, want to play with drawing and stickers, and then I have students who are interested in, you know, like members of the opposite sex and you know, and experimenting and being defiant. And so it's really all ends of the spectrum.
But middle school has also changed in ways you can barely imagine. Sex ed is definitely different. Social media is totally new. We'll hear from grown-ups what they think about middle school now, but we'll also hear from kids themselves about their hopes, dreams, and aspirations.
That's one of my life goals, to make a group of friends that I'll remember for the rest of my life. And right now, I think I'm doing pretty good with it.
It's the California Report. Today, we broadcast a special edition of the California Report focused on middle school. Most of our listeners are probably not in it right now, but most of us have lived through those years. You're not a little kid anymore. You're also not a big kid. Mother Nature is starting to do terrible things to your body. Everything you love is suddenly ridiculous to your peers, and the homework, it can be overwhelming. Our desire to put this period behind us as fast as possible leads us to forget about the people who are living through it right now. Middle school gets short shrift most of the time. Well, not today. To start, we hit the streets of San Francisco, San Diego, and Fresno to talk to a few grown-ups about what they remember about middle school back in the day. Hallie Brown remembers...
puberty. Hormones. Growth, like transformation. It's definitely a time of transformation.
Peter Marhinke remembers...
being more interested in my friends than what the teacher was saying, and always hungry.
Vanessa Cabrera remembers.
You know, there was like cliques, and it was just hard trying to find like who you were.
Now just imagine standing in front of a classroom full of all that drama. Eighth grade English teacher Madeline Edelman does it every day. This is her seventh year in the classroom. She teaches at a Green Dot Charter School in South Los Angeles called Animo Phyllis Wheatley. And we caught her at her desk before the first bell to ask what middle school looks like from her vantage point.
It's a weird age. They're not little anymore. They're not completely compliant, and they're not completely reliant on adults. But at the same time, they're not old enough to really kind of be on their own. They're very likely to be influenced by people, especially older people. And so it's kind of a place for them to kind of deal with a lot of the issues of transitioning from being little to being more of like an adolescent, and keeping them safe at the same time. And then with all of the other emotional and physical changes that are going on, we try to teach them a few things at the same time. You know, we try to make sure that they're staying on track for their academics. So it's important to separate them and let them have that space and not be influenced by older kids who may not understand what they're going through.
So that seems like it would raise a lot of challenges dealing with a group of people who are in a critical developmental stage, but different kids are going through it at different paces. And so not everybody's on the same page, developmentally speaking.
Yeah, I would say that is what makes it a very interesting and also kind of funny and humorous and weird thing, is that I have students that, you know, want to play with drawing and stickers, and then I have students who are interested in, you know, like members of the opposite sex and you know, and experimenting and being defiant. And so it's really all ends of the spectrum.
There are a lot of adults in general and educators in specific who would go running from this particular group of kids. What is it about teaching middle school that appeals to you?
when I first started, I did not want to teach middle school. I wanted to teach seniors and, you know, teach high school and discuss the merits of literature. And then I fell into it. And, you know, I think that, number one, you have to be kind of a weird person to like teaching middle school. And I'm kind of quirky and weird. And so I see these kids who just, they're in desperate need of someone to be a loving force, but at the same time, setting very clear boundaries, because I really think that that's what middle school kids need. I think that they need someone who really cares about them. They need to feel safe and loved, but they also need to understand that as they grow up, there are things that they should and shouldn't do.
I think this particular age group is adorable, smart, earnest, you know, full of fun, like you say. Why is it so many people have such mixed feelings about these kids?
I mean, I think, number one, it's never calm. Like, there's always something frenetic happening. The other thing is that it can be very challenging. I mean, the need to get the approval of peers. And so that's huge in middle school. And when you're trying to set boundaries for a kid who maybe doesn't necessarily want those boundaries to be set or isn't used to that, there can be a lot of pushback.
Thousands of kids don't make it out of middle school. They drop out. And there are plenty of studies that show that middle school is kind of a transitional moment, a critical moment in a child's education. If they're failing in middle school, it's a pretty good predictor they're not going to do well in high school either. I'm wondering if you can talk about that a bit.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the reasons why I love working for Green Dot is because they have this focus on middle school. We started opening middle schools in order to help prepare kids for high school. And I think that that's one of the other reasons why I stayed in middle school, is that I realized how important it was, that even though it can be challenging, especially with some kids, like, I'm their last stop. If I don't do something to intervene, if I don't make sure that they have an adult in their life that cares about them, they won't make it through high school. And so I really do think that because that they're at this transitional point, and because there are so many problems going on, that we're there to support them so that they can focus on their academics.
Madeline Edelman is an eighth grade English teacher at Animo Phyllis Wheatley Charter Middle School in Los Angeles. Well, let's not let the adults hog this conversation. We asked seventh grader Xavier Bermudez what he would change about his middle school experience.
Well, there's lots of bullies in school, and I would want to change that.
Ana Gabriela Turiel says she sees too many kids in her school smoking and doing drugs.
I would like to have a better group of kids because some of the kids in my school are not the nicest ones.
We're growing up now. We're starting to get a lot more mature and stuff.
That's seventh grader Andrew Cardona. He actually loves his middle school, but
I gotta be honest with you, the first day was kind of dull.
Kind of what?
Dull.
Can you say that again?
Dull, like boring.
But as you can imagine, dull is hardly the worst of it. Nothing is more awkward in middle school than talking about sex. So, of course, that's exactly what we're going to talk about now. A warning to people listening with small children. Some of the language in this next story is going to be quite explicit. Seventh grade is when most California school children encounter sex education in the classroom. But now that many kids are getting exposed to the subject on the internet, the curriculum is particularly underwhelming, as Sam Harnett reports.
Katie Cunnington says it's not always easy to get answers to the kinds of questions she's starting to have.
Like, why do I have cramps? Why do I have, like why do I have blood all over me? Like, you need to know.
Cunnington is wearing braces and mismatched socks. She's a Bay Area seventh grader, and like more and more kids, she's looking for answers online. In other words, she's Googling it.
Yeah. Google's my friend, so I do that, yeah.
But the information she gets isn't always what she's looking for.
It's kind of embarrassing. I was like, what does popping a cherry mean? And I was like, what does that mean? And then like I was like, ew, like that's gross.
It's not hard to find gross on the internet. Often it's just a click away. A U.S. Department of Health and Human Services white paper says that most children will see porn by the time they're 18. Maybe on purpose, by accident, or while looking for information about sex. Digital media is everywhere and hard to control. In fifth grade, Cunnington saw a sexually explicit video on the photo-sharing app Instagram, and she's seen porn pop up on Tumblr.
even if you only follow Disney blogs, you still get porn on Tumblr a lot. Like, so I do have to, like, I'll be like, oh, God, okay, what's that?
Not only are some of the things shocking, she says, they're confusing.
It's kind of scary, too, because you'll be like, what is this? And then you're like, oh! And then you realize it's not what it is. And it's like, you think, like, something's way different.
While kids are increasingly seeking information about sex and encountering it online, teaching materials in sex ed classes are often outdated. We're talking old school and awkward.
When puberty starts, these sex hormones really get busy.
Linda Wilhelm plays this movie to her 7th grade class every year at Valley View Middle School in Pleasant Hill, a Bay Area suburb. In order to make the picture clear on her old TV, she has to give it a whack. The film's from 1992, and Wilhelm says it's hard to take seriously. Also at her disposal is a chart with obsolete contraception information and a textbook showing the rudiments of the reproductive system.
So it's basically what I call the plumbing.
Each school district in California approves its own curriculum materials. Wilhelm says hers haven't been updated in years. The district says it'd like to modernize materials, but that takes time and money. And right now, the focus is on implementing the Common Core, new statewide education requirements.
What's really kind of alarming is that even though all the social medias are changing, our content, our district-approved curriculum, hasn't changed at all.
Old materials can predate contemporary issues like online relationships, internet pornography, and the pressures of social media. Wilhelm gives kids resources to check out after class, things like kidshealth.org. It's a website with information on puberty and sexuality.
We try to teach online safety, but not necessarily how it relates to sexuality and all the sexting and all that. It's not part of the curriculum.
The California Department of Education says there are state funds to help provide current, medically accurate information. Schools can check out new resources, websites like Go Ask Alice and Sex Etc. There are also services where teens can text questions and get answers. But Monica Rodriguez says these digital tools aren't in widespread use.
We're still very focused on traditional materials, kind of paper and pencil and textbooks, while young people are living their lives digitally.
Rodriguez heads CECUS, a national advocacy group for sex education. She says part of the problem is that sex ed isn't on most standardized tests, so it's not prioritized. Plus, there's always the chance fresh materials will cause an uproar. At a high school in Fremont, for example, parents petitioned to remove a new textbook. It covered topics like online dating, sexual fetishes, and hooking up. Rodriguez says to avoid potential conflict, districts hesitate to update sex ed curriculum.
Teachers or districts fear that it's going to cause controversy, so they just kind of put it off and put it off.
Unlike a lot of kids, middle schooler Katie Cunnington says she's lucky. She can talk to her parents about this stuff. Even so, she said she'd like to have a safe place online to go for some answers. It would be less awkward than asking her parents or her teachers.
Yeah, because when you're in a class, people will make fun of you. They're like, oh, ha ha ha, you don't know what that means. Or, oh, ew, like, what is that? Or like, but it's like, you kind of need to know because you need to be, like, safe and you need to know.
Cunnington will have more sex ed classes in high school. She hopes the videos there aren't as corny as the gem from Ms. Wilhelm's class.
Mom? I've got a few questions.
There's a lot more to know about sexuality. We haven't talked about all of the questions
or about all the serious problems that exist. Like when.
For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett in Pleasant Hill.
Remember, all the kids in the show got answers because they asked. You can ask too.
Don't go away. In a few moments, we'll have information on how to obtain the VHS cassette of this important program, as well as the viewer's guide. For other resources about talking to your kids about sex and growing up, please contact the Bay Region 4 Healthy Kids Center of the California Department of Education.
At this point in the digital revolution, children as young as one are salivating for their own phone, if they haven't simply appropriated yours. But the conversation really amps up around middle school. Comedian Jim Brewer describes his parental logic this way in his one-man show, And Laughter for All.
My daughter's 13, still no phone. No phone.
No.
No. And I don't negotiate. Why can't? Because no. Give me a good reason. No and no.
Most parents who can afford it end up capitulating. According to Nielsen, 8 in 10 12 to 17-year-olds have cell phones. Almost 1 in 2 have smartphones, but not Brewer's daughter.
Well, you know, everybody in, like, America is 13 has a phone, Dad. Well, you don't. You're special. Be different. How exciting.
Yelda T. Uhls isn't going to come out and say Brewer is wrong.
Every family is different.
But the senior researcher at the Children's Digital Media Center at UCLA will say Brewer's daughter has a point.
It's true. By not allowing them to have a phone, you're disconnecting them from many of their peers, and many of their peers have phones and are talking that way. So they're socializing that way, and your child is not in that sphere.
Uhls is also the Southern California Regional Director of Common Sense Media, an online nonprofit resource for parents, teachers, and other adults interacting with children. And she has two research subjects / kids, ages 11 and 14. Now, Uhls is not advocating for struggling parents to feel pressured to get Junior a smartphone, but you do need a smartphone to play a lot of games and to take and post photos. 14-year-old Eli Mundy was brought to our attention by his cousin and California Report producer Guy Marzorati. Guy says Eli's a monster on Instagram.
You can say that, I guess. Yeah.
Eli has 750 followers. He follows about 1,000 people. His passion is photography, especially photos of sports shoes, which he collects.
Like, if you went through my feed, it would be shoes, 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 like a friend, and then more shoes.
Eli's a bright, appealing kid with a confident personality and good grades. Do his parents hover over his social media use? No.
I don't really even have time to be responding to all my emails. And I feel like it would be a complete time sink for me if I started doing something like that.
Eli's mom, Alberta Nelson, is an educator, as is her husband. She's heard of kids misbehaving online, but she's not worried for Eli.
I really do think it all boils down to what kind of relationship you have with your kid. And I feel like Eli is very responsible. I think he would worry if he put something out there that he shouldn't. And we've talked a lot about just the fact anytime you press send on anything, it's out there and you really don't have any control over it.
But as everybody knows who's survived middle school, even innocent children will witness, if not be victimized, by the bad behavior of other children. It happens on the playground. It happens on social media.
Twisted cat and mouse game always starts the same. First we're both down a plate and somehow you go astray.
This racy video for Iggy Azalea's Black Widow includes a none-too-subtle product placement for Wickr, one of a growing number of apps that allow users to exchange encrypted, self-destructing messages. Experts will tell you the false promise of anonymity tempts some people to bully others and or to send sexually explicit photos. It's a false promise because the conversation is not temporary or anonymous if someone involved knows how to take a screenshot. And whether you're a witness or a victim, it can feel like you can't get away from the yuck.
What's different today as opposed to when we grew up is the bullying can follow you home because it's online. It's on 24/7. It's viral and it's very public.
Yelda T. Uhls puts it this way. You wouldn't let go of a squirmy toddler's hand in a parking lot. You shouldn't let go of a 10-year-old's hand while he learns the rules of engagement online. Given what she's observed professionally, she keeps a tight rein on her kids at home.
You have to give me your passwords. I own this thing. If I see behavior I don't like, I'll take it away. Until you're 18, I'm paying for this. And I also have their email on my phone, which has been highly useful.
But presuming you have laid out ground rules and that your child is more or less responsible, there comes a time to start easing up. I'll let Eli Mundy have the last word.
If you're too overprotective, they're going to feel like they don't have any freedom. I mean, you should kind of, you know, lay back. And if you think something bad is happening, check it out. But, I mean, for the most part, you just kind of let them make their own decisions. And I think that's part of growing up.
What do you think? Let us know on the California Report's Facebook page. I know kids don't even use that anymore. You could email us at calreport@kqed.org. I know, old school.
never should it sound like you're going, like really like breathing it, kind of like bluesy, like if you were like singing a...
That's mandolinist and violinist Eva Scow. She directs ensembles for the Milestones Youth Jazz Workshop, a project of the nonprofit Jazz Fresno. It's the first rehearsal of the year for this jazz combo, made up mostly of middle school-aged kids from all over the city. Alice Daniel sent us this audio postcard from the band room.
Give me a bossa nova beat. Give me a samba beat. One, two, here we go. Our goal in Milestones is to teach you how to play jazz, but also to teach you how to play together, right? So playing in a jazz band, you're going to come across a lot of different things that maybe aren't going to be on paper or maybe you're not going to be comfortable or used to. Over here.
Yeah, this is my first year. I've never played jazz before. Yeah.
You want to try? How about try it with Deshavon? Because she already put herself out there. I know you can. One, two, three, and.
My name is Scout Whitaker, and I play violin. There's a form that you follow, but you know, it's much more relaxed and it brings more improvisation that really doesn't happen in classical music, but it's such an important musical quality. I feel like it's truly music because it's emotions that you're trying to portray. It's not emotions that were written down for you. It's improv. You make it up as you go. It's what you feel.
My name is Leo Perigilli. When you improvise, that's where the creativeness comes in. And even when you're reading music, you can add little dynamics or anything like that. You can do trills, or you can maybe do a note that's maybe a slightly bit higher or something. And it just makes it sound awesome with the rest of the group.
I am Deshavon Ricks. What I like about jazz is that you can improvise and be yourself when you play.
One, two, three, four. I'm Jim Page. I started Milestones 3 years ago. It occurred to me that there are so many kids that didn't have access to jazz education and performance programs, and it just didn't seem fair to me. We provided scholarships to go to our summer program, and in return, two school districts are providing facilities for us for our school year program at no cost.
I live with my mom. She's a single parent, so she wouldn't be able to afford it with four other kids, so I got a scholarship to be in it. When Milestones came, I was surprised because of the way that they played. And, like, I never heard of jazz. And the way that they played, it just really, like, touched my heart because I really wanted to play that.
Finally, today we take you northeast of Los Angeles to San Gabriel. KPCC's Mary Plummer paid a visit to an eighth grader who tells us the secret to surviving and thriving in middle school is finding a family of friends who've got your back and share your passions.
Hello. Come on in.
Okay, hold up. Let me clean up some things. Okay.
Hi, I'm Fiona Pang. I'm 13 years old. I currently go to Jefferson Middle School in San Gabriel, and I am the speech and debate team captain. So this is my room. It's purple because I like the color purple. So, yeah. That's my speech and debate trophy. It was against 93 people, and I won 9th, so that was pretty good. This is my pin for, it says captain. This is my whistle that for the team's captains got. It's green, it has a green lanyard, and it's a standard black whistle. It's pretty cool. And then these are all my medals. Speech and debate is practically my whole life. It revolves around everything. I met some of my closest friends there. You definitely build a family. You get so close to them that it seems like, oh, well, I know they're there for me, and I know that someone actually cares now. Before seventh grade, before I met my speech and debate family, I definitely felt really lonely. I think because now we have social media, everything just seems to go ballistic. And when you can't control something, you're like, oh, well, I can control the calories. I can control how much weight I lose. I was constantly like looking for the internet for stuff. It just seems like, oh, everyone's doing this. I want to fit in, so I'm going to do it too. And I felt like, oh, well, maybe if I just lost 3 more pounds by next week, I can sit with the cool kids at lunch. So it was this very never-ending pressure. I am about to read my speech for Speech and Debate. It's about body image and how you can accept yourself. As a child, I was cute, I'm not going to lie, and I didn't care about how my hair looked or about the clothes I wore. I was carefree. But as I grew older, I learned about society's idea of perfect body, fat talk. I couldn't accept how I looked and was always striving to impress everyone, but mostly society's idea of perfection. I feel fat. It's the worst thought to have while getting ready. That, or possibly, I hate that my thighs touch. It sucks that we live in society where we are judged, even if we do right or wrong. What I miss when I was younger was not necessarily caring. Like, in middle school, you definitely get judged more. My entire middle school experience is mixed. Because there's the good times, the bad times, the times where you want to cry, the times where you think, this is the best time of my life. Where I am, I think I'm close to a teenager. There's still that side of me that likes to go out and have fun and act like I'm 9 again, but that's just who I am. The best part of middle school would be the self-discovering part. That's definitely fun. And it's definitely when you find your group of friends that you will remember till high school and college. And I think that's one of my life goals, to make a group of friends that I'll remember for the rest of my life. And right now, I think I'm doing pretty good with it.
Fiona Peng is an eighth grader at Jefferson Middle School in San Gabriel. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. The online team includes David Weir, Lisa Pickoff-White, Adam Grossberg, and David Marks. Our interns are Adiza Egan and Isaac Silk. The California Report's editorial team includes Victoria Malione, Polly Stryker, Ingrid Becker, and Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children.